We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh, no. With MyBookie and its cash-out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag. Every day, companies you've probably never heard of are making billions off your personal data. Name, address, phone number, even details about your family. All being pulled from public records and the internet, and then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace making money off your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Plus, they alert you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal tool. It's a full digital security suite. VPN, antivirus, password manager, spam call protection, and dark web monitoring for your social security number, bank logins, and passwords. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other services charge the same, but only cover one or maybe two areas. With Aura, you get all of it in one simple app. Right now, you can try Aura for free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That's enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. Check website for more details.
Got to get to the eight. He's going to take off and run. Mendoza weaves his way first and goes diving toward the end zone. Touchdown! That's where he won the Heisman Trophy.
What a call. What a call by Kurt Cignetti and the offensive coordinator, Mike Shanahan. Quarterback draw. He definitely breaks the plane, holds on to the football for a touchdown. What an individual effort, as you said, Chris, by the Heisman Trophy winner.
This is the ZabeCast. From the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go. And there it was, the call of a lifetime for Chris Fowler and the play of the game and a moment in time and just a visual. The photographs of Mendoza diving into the end zone will be made into posters and canvas art and statues, and they will adorn man caves and city plazas all throughout Indiana for the rest of time. Indiana football national champions. If you don't believe it, you can Google it. See what I did there? That was creative by me, wasn't it? A game and a story so good, it has few rivals in the world of sports, and it's only appropriate on the day after to bring in my friend Matt Miller, a man about film who is also very much a man about college football. Brother, that was something, wasn't it?
That was quite the game. I was ready to be disappointed, actually. I went into the night being like, this championship's coming too late.
Yeah.
The buzz is not there. Like, it's a fun matchup, but, you know, is this game going to have any juice? And even in the first half, even though I spent that entire game being like, Indiana's not going to lose this game. Like, Indiana's easily outplaying Miami.
Right.
Like, this game is close, but not close at the same time. I was like, this game kind of rules. Like, I'm enjoying watching these two teams play each other. They've both got really fun storylines. Obviously, Indiana's is iconic.
Yeah.
That now if someone's like, I want to watch the movie, the sports movie Hoosiers, there's going to be a whole generation of kids who are going to be like, oh, the football team movie? Like, like, hey, Hollywood, free pitch idea for you. Hoosiers 2, this time it's football.
Yeah. Early on, once Indiana got up 10-0, and I think they got their feet under them, and they had figured out, yeah, we got to block Reuben Bain. I know the other guy on the other side is really good as well, but Bain is just a fucking menace. And I'm like, okay, they're gonna start to constrict like a boa. They're going to start to choke out Miami. But, I mean, Miami was too tough. And the referees were letting them play, which is also a big thing right there. And Mendoza got whacked 3 times in the first half, a point that Cignetti was very quick to mention. Was it Holly Rowe or no? It was the other sideline reporter.
Molly McGrath.
Molly McGrath. Yes, on the way to the locker room. So yeah,
that's probably the most attitude a coach has given in one of those halftime interviews. Normally, it's just all platitudes. Normally, it's all like, "Oh, we got to play a little bit harder. I'm a little disappointed in my defense, but we're gonna go in there, figure some things out. We'll come back out here and do a great job, and hopefully get the W and go home." And instead,
sounds like you've watched a football game or two in your life, Matt.
I've dabbled around the edges of a football game, I guess you could say.
That's exactly what they
Cignetti normally
say.
But came out and he was like, they got to start calling these calls. My quarterback's mouth is bleeding. Like, listen, I'm waiting for the inevitable Cignetti backlash to come. Like,
oh, it's coming.
It's coming. Like when Indiana wins like 2 or 3 straight years in a row, or, you know, once they beat up on some cute underdog that's the Hoosiers of that season, we're all going to turn on Cignetti. But if in the moment, he's great. Like, as of this moment, he is exactly what I want a college football coach to be.
Now, it's an incredible story. And I think the question is it the greatest Cinderella? Is that even the right word? Because Cinderellas are usually, hey, for a brief hot moment, they got good and they won the whole thing. Like, Cinderella's more like they got hot and won a tournament.
Like a Leicester City, if we're talking soccer.
Well, I was gonna mention another. You have to be both a Cinderella and an underdog and a completely improbable system disruptor where the notion of you doing this was preposterous on the face. Right.
Yeah. And it needs to be, I think, a one season thing. I think that's the reason why Indiana maybe isn't the greatest Cinderella story of all time, is because Indiana was good last year. Indiana made the playoff last year. And yeah, they got bounced by Notre Dame, but they were in the playoff. They were a playoff worthy team. Debate amongst yourselves.
Right.
So there was this feeling of Indiana's going to come back this year and they're going to be good. There wasn't quite the surprise factor of, like, I don't know, if UTEP went 15-0 and made it to the playoff, you'd be like, that wasn't even on our scorecard. Right. I don't even know what UTEP is. Who are the Miners?
Who is a UTEP? Yes, exactly.
The Wiley Miners. But yeah, it's just, I think it definitely is an incredible story, but Cinderella, yeah, Cinderella has to be a night, you know? Cinderella has to be a moment as opposed to something that has a little bit more runway to it like this did.
Yeah. So there's a ton of absolutely freezing cold takes out there regarding Cignetti. Do you want to go through a few of them right now?
I would love to. I'd love to bathe in these. It's cold enough in Milwaukee. Let's bring the temperature down even more.
Yes. Matt Miller just got back from Aruba, people. So do not cry for him, Argentina. He's back from Aruba.
warmer there.
This one from the Twitter account Scary Alvarez. Haha, not Barry Alvarez. Obviously a Wisconsin fan. This prick, meaning Cignetti, this prick is going to be last place in the Big Ten and wins in 2024, but first with a bullet in being a detestable shitbag. Okay. You know, the backlash, like you said, it's coming. Anyone who has any amount of success at a level cannot fully stay in everyone's best graces, right?
Yeah. Right now it's all the cuddly stories. Right now it's all the like, oh, Kurt Cignetti is nice to his workers, and he has a reasonable work schedule that he gives everybody. And yeah, he gives us fun memes. And then as soon as they lose like 3 or 4 games in a season, then all of a sudden someone's going to be like, actually, Kurt Cignetti's a real prick. Like, then the people are, it's going to be like when Russell Wilson, there was always like chatter on the outside of like, Russell Wilson, I don't really, people kind of don't like this guy. And then as soon as Russell Wilson wasn't good enough to put up with, then every knife came out of the holster. Right. Every weapon came out drawn on that dude.
Okay, next one.
Enjoy it while it lasts, Kurt.
Next one up. This one is from Ohio's Tate on Barstool. I think he's pretty knowledgeable about college football. A lot of people hate his guts. He's a big Ohio State guy. His name is Tate. Here's what he tweeted. From the desk of Barstool Tate, Kurt Cignetti is exactly who I said he was, an FCS merchant and a fraud. I guess that's after they got knocked out of the playoff last year, right?
That is a freezer burn ass take right there. That is.
Right. I mean, that's like, I get it. You're an Ohio State fan. You don't want to believe that this upstart, this disruptor can come in and do what they did, right?
The idea that last season was a fluke, I mean, the guy turned Indiana into a winner. Indiana, a football team that most people forgot existed, a football team whose logo looked like a cereal brand logo for a bunch of years when I was growing, Antoine Randall L years.
Yes, the IU logo that was briefly their logo is maybe the worst logo in the history of sports. And I say
it's
that
some
with no
grain cereal
exaggeration. Yes. And the thing that they paid some firm, I'm sure good money.
Oh yeah,
to make that logo, right?
At least it was early 2000s, so it wasn't the era now where it would be like the black represents the black souls of our team who dominate their foes. The gold represents the streams of gold and oaks that roll through the fields of Indiana. Like, everybody now, they can't just do a new logo or like a rebrand. They have to have some like weird, bizarre methodology for why they chose blue,
right?
Beyond blue is nice.
Here's the logo right there. I mean, you got to be kidding me. It's an I and a U, slightly offset, so the I is higher than the U. It is in some generic italic font, and it's in an oval, a red circle with a white border. I would tell the firm that designed it, the fuck? Get out of my office. Did we not pay you money for a redesign? This is what you came up with?
It looks like the logo for like Incorporated Unemployed or something like that. Like some like big tech company or some like bizarre thing, or like it does not, it looks like Times New Roman. It looks like Eckrich Farm sausage. It's a real bad logo. And this is a school that for the longest time, their biggest probably crowning football achievement in the past 50 years was probably Antoine Randall L.
Yes, probably that. Yeah,
I cannot think of another relevant Indiana player. I mean, I'm sure there's someone from before my time, but like, and Antoine Randall L, what did he become? Like,
he was a good NFL player. Threw a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl. Great highlight there. Pittsburgh versus Seattle and Detroit, I believe it was. Super Bowl 50, I want to say. No, 40.
Yeah.
Super Bowl 40, I believe it was. We're on 60 right now. 20 years ago, Matt Miller, was 2006. And I'm old enough to remember 2006. So that's how fast the years go by, young man. Just be aware of that.
That.
Yeah, I know.
I don't like that at all. I know you don't like that. I remember 2006.
Okay. Next freezing cold take. This one from Colin Cowherd. This entire playoff is experimental. I combined experiential with experimental. This entire playoff is experimental. Things will change. Potential reseeding after round one. It may expand to 14 games. Change is inevitable. But let's make one non-negotiable rule. Indiana can never be invited again. Ice. Cold. Take. But then again, he's a guy who never revisits bad takes. He just keeps on moving. So he's not going to go back and say, here's what Colin got wrong about Indiana. Here's why I didn't see it. He's going to keep her moving.
he's going to double down probably and be like, Indiana, this a nice 2 years, but they'll disappear. They'll be like, you know, Central Florida or something like that, and they'll disappear. And meanwhile, Indiana, they've got a good setup going, and they play fun football too. Like, this is not like late tier Brady Patriots, where like you watch some of those teams and it was just dinking and dunking all over the yard.
Yeah.
And it was just not fun to watch that kind of domination. You watched Indiana yesterday and it was like, this is a team that'll beat you five different ways.
Hell yeah. This one from Coach Sarkisian at Texas. This idea of somebody's going to go 16-0 in college football, man, put a statue up somewhere of that team, because I just don't know if that's going to happen again. Well, there will be statues, right?
Coming soon to Bloomington, Indiana, right? Bloomington, that's where...
Bloomington. Now, again, he's not wrong. It's just a matter of, well, this is how incredible the story was that they did this. So let me ask this. So we were talking about the greatest stories ever of improbable super underdogs. Yeah. Not just in underdogs, but we're talking paupers. We're talking poverty level sports franchises, schools, programs, people, etc. You mentioned Leicester City in the Premier League. Can you speak to that? Because I believe you speak fluent EPL.
Yeah. So this was before I was a big a footy fan. But if I remember the story, Leicester City, very unknown team. Like, this is not a Manchester United, Man City. This isn't even a West Ham. Like, they're barely Premier League level.
Barely hanging on. In fact, they were down before they got elevated. They were in the second tier, weren't they?
Yeah, I don't know if it was their first or second year up in the Premier League, but they weren't supposed to go anywhere. They've had no legacy of going anywhere. And one season, I believe it was, I want to say 2015, they just went on a tear and won the Premier League, which is very hard because the Premier League is very college football like, where six teams basically control it. You know, it's six teams have all the money and everyone else gets, you know, good spirit. It's the future MLB, you know, everyone's the Dodgers, you know, like five teams are the Dodgers. Everyone else gets to be the Royals, and Leicester City managed to be the Royals that won the Premier League. And, yeah, I don't even know if they're still in the Premier League. They might have.
They might have been knocked down again, I'm sure.
I know they got knocked down for once, for sure.
Right, after they won it. And they were a super long shot. And here's the other thing that's impressive about winning the EPL. So you mentioned it's like college football. In college football, there's some semblance of limits now of spending. There's no limits on spending in the EPL. So it's almost like Formula One plus college football in the English Premier League. Mm-hmm. They're buying players, international players, for tons and tons of money and transfer fees. So that's the taxes on top of the players as well. Okay, so Leicester City is one.
5,000-1 underdog with bookmakers before the season began.
Okay.
5,000-1 underdog.
The miracle, the miracle on ice would qualify as one of the greatest stories ever. Now, I don't know what Herb Brooks' boys were in terms of odds to win it going into the tournament, but I know this, they got slaughtered by the Big Red Machine in a game at Madison Square Garden just a month before the games themselves. And the fact that basically the Russians had professional players and, you know, Herb Brooks had a bunch of college kids, that story will never be, you know, diminished in its magnitude. Incredible.
Yeah, I think that one qualifies as the biggest gap between the Goliath and the David.
Sure,
where
sure.
Like the David was so small and the Goliath seemed so big that it automatically qualifies, even if U.S. hockey is not, you know, it's not Leicester City.
Yeah, and then this is from golf. Francis, we met winning the 1912 U.S. Open at Brookline. Don't quote me on the year, but it was way back. He did it as a caddy. He was a caddy at the club at Brookline, and he entered the tournament because it wasn't open, and he ended up beating both Walter Hagen and who was Ted Ray in a playoff on Monday. So 18-hole playoff with two of the giants of the game of that era, and it was considered so insane and improbable, especially because he had a midget or small person who was his buddy caddying for him, that they did make a movie of this. Maybe one of the last good pieces of work that Shia LaBeouf ever made, which was a movie called The Greatest Game Ever Played, Yes. And I, as a golfer, really liked it. I don't know how it resonates with non-golfers, but I thought it was not horribly done. And that was before Shia LaBeouf went fucking crazy.
Yeah, he really did. He went he didn't go off the diving board. He went off the pool. He missed the pool entirely and smashed his face against the side. Yeah. Right. I remember that movie was like a modest hit, if I remember The Greatest Game Ever Played.
Yeah, I think it was okay. But like the magnitude of it was absurd to think that a kid could beat the greats of the game, but he did, and it was over four rounds and a playoff. So it wasn't a fluky one-time thing. Just like Leicester City, there's no playoffs in the Premier League. You have to win the table, which means the fluky, right? The flukiness of American sports in which we do playoffs, cue Jim Mora Jr., but not playoffs, was not in play there. And much like all of that, Indiana, in a span of four games, went through Ohio State, who was next up for them? Not Oregon, Alabama, Ohio State, Alabama, Oregon, and Miami. A freaking murderer's row of iconic programs.
Some of the bloodiest blue bloods you've got, exactly. Including Oregon, who's like the new sexy blue blood. You beat old new blood, you beat new blue blood. It's got to be an incredible one, because sometimes the NCAA basketball tournament will have like those cases of like a 15 seed, like a Florida Gulf Coast or somebody like that, making it far into a tournament. And you look back and you're like, oh, they kind of played like a weird 2 seed, and then they played a 10 seed and a 12 seed. Like they kind of had like a fairly easy road. And this is the opposite of that. You played behemoths. You played four Goliaths, and for the most part, wasted them. Like, just this, I think, was the closest game of the bunch.
This
right?
was by far the closest game of the bunch.
And even this one, like, again, this was the opposite of a Packers lead game, where like I spent this entire game being like, Indiana's not going to lose this game. They are the better team. Miami is the tougher team. I will give them that. But Indiana is surgical right now.
Yeah,
it was one hell of a performance this entire season.
That said, did you see some of the analytics that claim that the win prob for Indiana was sub 30% for much of the night? And it was really four plays made the difference in the game. The block punt, the two fourth down conversions, and the late third down back shoulder throw to Becker that kept that drive alive.
That's it is funny, because it was objectively a close game. It reminds me a lot of the, it was a Brady Super Bowl. I think it was Rams Patriots or one of those late tier ones where it was like 13, the golf one. It was,
Rams, the 10-3 final in Atlanta.
It was a close game the whole time, and the Rams couldn't do anything. Yeah. This was the opposite of that, where it was like, this game is close. I don't see Indiana blowing this. And they just had enough little plays to keep them at bay the whole time. They always had the punch.
All right, so did this, though, the whole story hit you in all the feels? All the feels. Or is there an element of this, well, it's a team of 24-year-olds. It's a team of guys that were full-on raided from James Madison, and I have a number of JMU buddies who get irate if the announcers are not mentioning, hey, don't forget about JMU. I think Fowler did mention them appropriately later in the broadcast. Also, on the photo and the moment where they picked up the trophy, all the guys that picked up the trophy were JMU guys. So I sent that picture out to my JMU guys going, well, here, frame this right here. This guy, they used to be at your school. So there you go.
Are they going
to
hang like an honorary championship banner up at the JMU field, like a 2025-20 or 2026 honorary national champions?
Some fans will do that. I would. Some fans would
JMU,
want to do that. Yes, exactly.
It's so like they, how so the, they were the Royals won the World Series. Yeah. I was like, this is like alternate universe Milwaukee Brewers World Series, because it was like Ned Yost and all these guys that the Brewers had traded in the Greinke trade. So I was just like, yeah, alternate universe Brewers won the World Series that year.
Right. The feels to me, were there, even though it's a team of 24-year-olds, even though Mendoza was getting paid probably $4 million himself as a portal guy to get paid. Oh, his brother today entered the portal. How about that? His brother, who was the backup, who you would have thought, what a great succession this is, right? And he's like, nope, I'm going to hit the portal and get paid.
Honestly, if you're him, you gotta, right?
No, like, you don't no gotta.
There's no way you disappoint. There's no way you don't disappoint next year. Like, Fernando Mendoza put up an incredible season the year, probably going to be number one draft pick, has one of the most iconic touchdowns in recent championship history. There's nothing you can do to make your own name at that school. And honestly, if he's smart, didn't the Duke guy, Mensa, didn't he very late do the transfer?
Oh, yeah. He also bounced as well. So there's
that.
So if
you're this Mendoza guy, you're probably like, yeah, I'm going to get out of here. Maybe go to Duke, who desperately needs a quarterback.
Georgia Tech apparently is hot and heavy for him. So if it's Georgia Tech, you know, it's kind of like a tier two portal guy. I don't think he's as good as his brother. Can't be.
If he plays at Indiana, we'll know for sure. Like, well,
I know this.
14-1 next year, and everyone would be like, "Not good enough. Get out."
Down season. Imagine the takes next year if they're 11-2. Down year. Signetti was a flash in the pan.
Yep. All these freezing cold takes, guys. As soon as these guys lose one last second field goal to, you know, Michigan or Ohio State, they're going to be like, ah, well, flat. What a year they had, but I guess that's just the one year, you know, wrap it up, call it a, he should probably go to a blue blood now. He should probably go to Penn State or Michigan or whatever big open job is available.
Yeah. So the one thing that was, I love the most, and I think you are like me, that you're an aesthetic and you love good images and good highlights. This photo of Mendoza diving in at a full diagonal with the Miami players both diving at him and trying to crash into him, that is art right there. In fact, I'm surprised the account Art But Make It Sports has not tweeted an actual artistic comparison. Are you aware of that account?
It's an incredible. I don't know how that account does what it does. For those who don't know, it's a Twitter account that does shots from a sporting event and then finds some art, some painting, some iconic photograph or something that looks just like it. I don't know how that person does it. I don't know how they have the encyclopedic mind to pull these references. It's wild.
Somebody did a story on it, and the guy that runs it claims he does not use Google Image Search or AI to take the sports photo and then run it through the internet grinder of, okay, find me art that looks the same with this person doing that, people do it. He claims it's his own knowledge of great art. Do you believe that?
That man is a liar. I like him a lot. He does incredible things. He's got to have like a factory of people or something like that, like looking up stuff or something. I just have a hard time believing this guy is that encyclopedic.
I think by now, and here's his website here. Look at this. There's a photo from earlier in the year that does look pretty darn incredibly close there. Yeah. Epic matchups where art and sports collide. Art But Make It Sports, 619,000 followers. So let's see. He's already got a couple comparisons here. One is a weird, it's like a modern triangle photo or paint. I don't even get that comparison there.
It looks like a crushed, like, solo cup or something.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And I don't imagine he's got people sending him stuff now. At this point, he's big enough that as soon as a big iconic photo happens. So, yeah.
Yeah. So. Or he has some sort of massive library that he's amassed now of, like, if blue photo, use these or something like that.
Right.
It's incredible, the iconography from last night.
Like, oh, yeah.
The Mendoza touchdown, which if that dude pans out in the NFL, that will be his logo. And then, you know, the bloody lip in the early in the game when he took that cheap shot from the Miami player and he's got the bloody lip. It was like last night really had to deliver because the vibe was bad around the college football playoff between all the portal stuff kind of sucking all the energy out from the discourse at the start of the postseason to the fact that it felt like this should have wrapped up a week ago and we were still watching college football.
Right.
And there, and the game needed to be great, and the game was indeed great. It's an incredible moment, and I can't wait to see how NCAA football fucks it up next year.
Have you seen the date for next year's title game?
Isn't it like the 28th or something?
25th.
Like that?
25th.
Nonsense.
Yeah. To quote another great movie line, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, you're going the wrong way. Hey, how does that idiot know where we're going?
And like, they're only going to add more games, which is only going to add more delays. And it's just like, oh my God. And like, yeah, it's, and what's the deal now? They're still debating over whether to go to the 16 playoff. The Big Ten and the SEC can't decide. And the Big Ten is like, we'll only do 16 if we can go to 24.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, the Big Ten is going to force their hand. It's ugly. It's unfortunate because at its best, college football delivers. It delivers all the cinematic Easter eggs and the iconic images, including what I like to call surrender cobras and mom shots. Surrender cobras and mom shots are the best. And after that Mendoza touchdown, they went to his mom and dad. Mom has been bravely battling MS for a number of years. And, you know, you had that, and then you had all the Miami fans doing this. Stunned disbelief.
Like the cave in Raiders of the Lost Ark that Indy gets dumped into. Just a whole cave of surrender cobras.
Exactly. There's also some other nuggets, including Michael Irvin. Where do you stand on the Michael Irvin experience? And would you like to have a mic'd up file of the entire night from him just to listen to an MP3 of the raw Michael Irvin 3 hours and 10 minutes raw Rode GoPro microphone?
I think he's a real a little goes a long way for me. Like, I enjoy him in bits and segments, and I'm like, yeah, this guy's really cooking right now. And then after about 2 minutes of time with him, I'm like, this is a lot.
You don't like this right here?
We're in a fight. We got to fight all damn day. We got to fight all damn day, D. And y'all got to lead him. Way to go. Way to go, boys. Way to go, D. Way to go, D.
I mean, here's one uncomfortable fact that I don't think Irvin wants to recognize or anyone else. These old heads, most of these kids today don't give a shit about them.
I was just going
to
say.
Michael Irvin got out of Miami. I don't want to say graduated, but he went to the pros in 86, something like that.
That sounds right. That should be
touch later. So we're talking forever ago. And Ray Lewis was there. Ed Reed was there. There's a funny, Ed Reed was wearing one of these stupid giganto hats. And somebody captioned it on Twitter as, imagine being consoled as a losing player by an old head in a giant fake baseball hat.
We've really normalized dudes going back to college. Like, we've really made it normal for these grown ass men to be, striding along the sideline, being like, "Ah, oh, come like, Michael, you're a spectator. Like, you are not a coach on this football team."
No, he thinks he is a coach. That's the thing. He's screaming at kids, "Come on,
sideline.
Come on, let's go, let's go." Here you go. Here's Ed Reed with the giant hat. This is Malachi Tony, who's a bad man. How do you take a guy seriously who's got one of those oversized hats? I mean, come on.
Looks like Pablo Sanchez from Backyard Baseball.
Exactly. Then there is the Carson Beck angle.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
I actually feel sorry for this guy, even though many people say you shouldn't. Because they point out
one of those people.
Okay. All right. Let me get the list of reasons not to like Carson Beck. First of all, he's
number one, the Woody Harrelson dabbing his eyes with dollar bills meme. Like, the man's been paid so much to finish in like third every year.
I believe he is. He played 7 years all told in college.
Oh my God. A whole touchdown. The Carson Beck touchdown.
Yeah. And, you know, these players are going to start suing left and right to get extra years because it's so much money if they know they're not going to be a pro. That is what, you know, Trinidad Chambliss is now suing because he got denied for a sixth year and he's now taking it to court and he might actually just win. All right, here's the tweet. Lives in Miami, posh beachfront townhouse, doesn't go to class, has celebrity porn star girlfriend, ends his team's natty chance with underthrown interception, doesn't shake a single hand walking off the field. He is who we knew he was. Pretty strong reason to say fuck Carson Beck, right?
I will add one too, as the husband of a Notre Dame fan. The miracle throw that he chucked up against Notre Dame in the first game of the season, the like Caleb Williams style, I don't know, I'm going to throw this ball up and see what happens, that his receiver incredibly bailed him out on with that one-handed catch. And everyone the next day was like, Carson Beck, Heisman front runner. It was very satisfying for me to see kind of him put in his place and to be like, nah, dude, like, you're a fine quarterback. You'll make a great backup for the Colts someday. Like, sorry, it's just not, you're not that guy.
He's going to rattle around like a BB in a coffee can 100%. In the NFL on rosters as QB2, QB3, practice squad QB, to the point where years from now, you're going to look at the rosters on Our Lads and go, holy shit, Carson Beck is with the Vikings?
He's going to be like Sam Ellinger, where like Sad Ellinger is second in line to play in the AFC Championship.
Yes, and we're like, Sam Ellinger is a classic example of one of those guys.
Still alive. Wow, what a world. I would have thought he would have been doing like the seventh best SEC network game each week.
All right, don't you have the dignity to become the next Greg McElroy, for God's sakes?
If Jarrett Stidham gets hurt on Sunday, he's going to be in the AFC Championship game. Yeah.
All right, here's some
absolutely stupid AFC Championship game. I'm so pissed at the Bills.
Here's some more on Carson Beck. Miami's three losses this year. SMU, lose by three. Beck, interception in overtime. Louisville, lose by three. Beck, interception to end the game. Indiana by six, national championship. Beck, interception to end the game. It gets worse. Carson Beck lost just six games in his college career as a starter. In four of them, the final offensive play was a Beck INT with a chance to win the game. And you're telling me you don't feel sorry at all for him.
He has a whole career of Packers great quarterbacks final throws. Just like every game is, interception. That's that on that. Again, he's extremely well paid for being a quarterback who is exactly who we think he is in college. He's going to get drafted in like the seventh round or something like that. Like I said, third stringer for the Vikings or some nonsense. And he's going to live a very comfortable life. And good for him. I'm glad he lost. I will never think of you again.
And then the one part that was not mentioned, that list of things, she's right here. The random, beautiful young lass that was flashed on the screen with no fonting, no announcer explanation. And it turns out it's Carson Beck's girlfriend, who happens to be a woman by the name of Abdella Danger. And she is an adult film star.
Oh, the poor guy. Brent Musburger somewhere was just begging to do the call on this game. Brent Musburger just running up to the booth with the microphone and being like, I got some stuff to say about this.
Do you remember the girlfriend's name? She was on the celebrity diving show after she gained viral fame. Catherine.
Is that it?
I can't remember the last name either. And the quarterback was?
It wasn't AJ McCarron, wasn't?
I believe it was McCarron.
Which scumbag Alabama quarterback who never
Catherine Webb.
Nothing was it.
Catherine Webb. Yeah, but Catherine Webb is legit beautiful. She is like a young version of Jacqueline Smith from Charlie's Angels.
That's a good pull. Yeah, that's a good comparison point. Yeah. She kind of like Allison Williams upgraded.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like that would probably be my like point, like modern point for people who, for the millennials listening who have no idea who Jaclyn Smith is.
Who don't, yeah, you're right. I guess we got to check our age on this one.
Yeah. Sorry. Everyone under 30 is like, pardon me.
Yeah. All right. Here's your Catherine McCarron, pictures right there. Or Catherine
Webb.
Still
married? Are they like together still?
I want to say they are, but I mean, that's incredible wild. Bikini body. Tall, lean, and of course, Musburger got tons of shit because how dare a creepy old man say anything nice about, you know.
Because he got horny on Maine. You shouldn't do it.
You know, one day,
it's
Miller.
Never a good idea to be horny on Maine.
Okay, one day, Miller, you're going to get old and your appreciation of the female form and vibrant young women will not have fully gone away and you will want to appreciate that, and you will then feel the sting of discrimination, like, hey, shh, 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 old, stop talking old, you're creeping me out. You'll know that someday. You're not there yet, but one day.
I've had those moments where my dad was at like a game or something, and just like, oh, who's that lady? And I'm like, Dad, please don't talk to me about this. Like, I know how this works.
Okay.
Time comes for us all.
Okay, so...
But don't be horny on Maine. That's the lesson here.
All right. By the way, explain that phrase to me, horny on Maine. What's that come from?
It's basically, you know, don't be horny on Main Street. You know, don't be...
In public. Don't be horny in a high-profile spot.
Like yeah, that, you okay. know?
Yeah. All right, here's Abdella Danger. And there's none...
Oh, wow, you
I went there.
To Google search this.
Well, it's my own computer, so...
You're
there's
a brave
no,
man, Steve.
There's no HR in the house. So was it out of bounds for ABC ESPN to even show her? Or should they have fonted her and said, oh, there's Carson Beck's girlfriend. She's obviously very nervous about this game.
I think it was probably wise the way that the path they went around it, where you put her on camera and those who are watching know. But you don't have to do the awkwardness of the, you know, and this is Carson Beck's girlfriend, who's a very successful ... awkward silence actress.
What's funny is that the stories I'm reading don't say that they're dating, but she's called a Carson Beck supporter. And she's an ex-adult star. She's now an influencer. Okay, then.
That Venn diagram is just one circle. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, there was that from last night. What
she's just a super fan? Is that just like, man, journalism's so confusing now.
All right, let's talk television for a second. What'd you think of the broadcast? Ooh. I played the highlight of Fowler's call, which was excellent. Fowler's good. I don't like that his vocal tonality is soft-edged, and so he has a hard time punching through the noise of a broadcast, but I respect him a lot. He's never really made my eyes roll in annoyance, and he calls good games. Voice is a minus, but it's okay. Herb Street is a whole different story, and I don't know where you want to begin on either one, but give me your thoughts on the broadcast.
I thought there was not much in the broadcast that I was angry with or very, very little that I was like, well, that didn't quite play right by me. I do agree that Fowler has never done me wrong, but can I think of a Chris Fowler iconic call off the top of my head?
No.
No, I think he meshes with the game well.
Sure.
But he never adds the punctuation that an incredible announcer can do.
I would have preferred McDonough. McDonough called it for ESPN Radio if you wanted to sync that up, but that's just me. McDonough is still a dark, he's like a cup of coffee black for a lot of people. He's a little bit too dark and serious and whatever, but he punches up a game really well. Let me register my main complaint with Herbie, and I said this on Twitter last night. I said, I would tolerate Herbie a lot better if he just gave me 20% less of himself. The problem with Herbie, and you'll notice this now that I'm going to tell you, because when I point out announcer flaws, Those of you who hear me point them out can never unhear them. I've ruined Al Michaels for a number of people about his whining. I've ruined Troy Aikman for a number of people about his constant use of good job, great job, heck of a job. The thing about Herbie is this, Miller. He is in there, and he is on you, and he doesn't stop until just seconds before the next snap. In other words, he does not let the broadcast breathe at all. He is literally analyzing shit 2 seconds after the tackle. Now, to a certain degree, it's a skill set of he really knows ball and he's watching the game intently and he can tell you the left tackle should have pulled here. That's why he missed his guy. But you don't always need that or want that in certain moments, especially when the game is coming down to it at the end. I want from the color guy, I want big picture strategy. I want scene setting. I want narrative of, okay, here they are. It's 3rd and 5. They're at the 20. They're only up 3. I would want to think this is 2-down territory, but they got to have a positive yardage play here on 4th down if I'm comfortable. That's what his time should be spent saying in between plays. And he should also leave a good chunk on the front and the back to let it breathe just a fucking bit. Instead, he is on you with X and O analysis 2 seconds after almost every play.
Ugh. That's a good call. I think there is something about him where it a Kirk and Chris Fowler game can feel like a lot of white noise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I honestly, like, I probably don't register much complaints about the broadcast last night because it just faded into the background.
I know.
And that's what they're very good at, in a way, is that they're never intrusive in that kind of way. They're just kind of like a din in the back of the game. And I do think he has, you know, that this is not meant to be a joke. He's got golden retriever energy. You know, he has the, I'm wanting to impress you. I wanted to show that I did my research. Look at all this stuff. And on some level, I appreciate that. That's someone who's trying to teach me and like trying to show me more about the game other than, you know, a touchdown would be good here. That would be a good point.
Right. But, so a lot of times less is more and the simpler, the better. I don't need you to tell me about how this backup safety was a redshirt freshman and broke his ankle. Not right now in this moment. You know, this is not a random Tulane game on a Saturday. This is the national championship. Narrative, strategy, X's and O's. But when you said he has got big golden retriever energy, I thought you were taking a shot at his dog thing.
Well, I was making a reference to it. That's but I mean, no wonder he's got a golden retriever. They're the same thing. And I do think like it's the stuff where it's like when we saw them against SMU and they played this play and it's just like, that's a really nice factoid. I don't know how much I'm gleaning from that. Like, I'm not going to be sitting there being like, oh, that's right. They did do that against SMU. Like,
done though with Herbie's dog and all the social media pop and everything else, the celebrity status? Because many people are. And I ask you this.
In this day and age, I can't really be mad at a guy for having a dog that he likes. You know, there's so many like.
But you know, the shot on it is
to dislike some people and stuff like that. That's just like, I don't know, man. He's got a cute dog. I'm a dog person. That's fine.
But the shot on it is, okay, great, dude. You got a dog, like you and millions of other people. It doesn't take much to get a dog. I know if you rescue one, they do check you out for having a decent background. And you and your lovely bride are very much dog people. How many do you have?
We have, I always joke, we have 3.5.
What's the half? A dachshund?
I co-own a dog with an ex-girlfriend of mine. It was too cute to leave. So. Oh,
okay. So, yeah, the dog thing, I don't really care per se. I didn't like the fact that he was playing fetch with the dog down the hallway of the Four Seasons he was staying in because, hello, there's other guests there, you know? Even though you got special dispensation, and even though, oh, you know, what's the dog's name? He's so adorable, he would never hurt anybody. A lot of people don't like dogs, big dogs. It's a big dog coming up.
A lot of people are allergic to dogs.
Well, they're allergic to dogs, and they don't want to pop out of the elevator and see a 60-pound golden retriever jumping up in their lap. Oh, don't worry, Ben is totally friendly. He's really great. You know, you're like, well, yeah, but I got hair all over my pants now. So thanks for nothing.
I mean, it's the partisan, the college football partisan hackery that Kirk Herbstreit has devolved into. That's the stuff I don't like. The the only two conferences matter. And
well, yes.
One of them is the only conference that matters. Like, Kirk Herbstreit didn't used to be that guy. And now he super has become the only teams I care about are the only teams that anyone should care about guy.
Yeah, that's the larger problem with Herbstreit is that he is also in the opinion space now with all his appearances on College Game Day and McAfee and everything else. And it's fine to have appearances or fine to have opinions, but the more you have, the more chances you're going to piss people off. And he has had a very sanctimonious stance on a number of things, to which I say, dude, stop taking yourself so seriously. And please talk 20% less.
And it's got to be the ESPN coaching, because I don't remember Finebaum being this big of a hack either.
Oh, Finebaum has gone full hack.
Like the actually Vanderbilt, Indiana's not that good of a story, and Vanderbilt's just as fun of a story, and it's just like, shut up.
This is so wrong. Finebaum back in October was saying on ESPN, I don't know why Indiana jumped the gun to give him a new contract. Wait to see how it plays out on Cignetti. Are you kidding me?
Getting him at a discount now.
Right, exactly. Talk about freezing cold takes. That's probably one of the worst ones. Last television thing, and then we'll let you go. Whose dog there is? Are you comforting? I feel bad that this podcast.
That is Tot. That is little Totty. She is annoyed by our Paul Finebaum take. She hates Paul Finebaum.
Can you pick her up and put her in your lap, and so I can see her right now?
I'm trying to grab her.
Trying to lure her over. She's camera shy. She podcast shy.
She's a little shy little doggo.
And your 3.5 dogs are all rescues, I trust.
They are not, because my wife is a competitive dog person.
Oh, that's right. She's a breeder, isn't she?
This is Tot.
That's a border collie, yeah?
This is a Sheltie. This is a little itty-bitty Sheltie. My apologies to the listeners for all the audio mayhem that she's been wreaking on this podcast.
Oh.
She is less than 10 pounds, and she's got to get good at agility.
Do the pull.
Because my wife does dog agility. She's not a breeder, but she does the dog agility, which is the the dogs running through doing the weaves and the teeters and stuff like that. It's very fun. Highly recommend.
Yeah.
This is the content people want.
Last television thing. I watched most of the game on the ESPN 4K feed, which is part of the YouTube TV package that I pay an extra $20 a month for. And I was watching it on my Samsung Frame TV, ultra-high resolution OLED display, one of the best panels I've ever had in my life. And it was sublime how clear and perfect and amazing the picture was. However, that feed comes with 0.0 commercials. Many people were saying, oh my God, I love it. It's so great. And my response is, no, I hate it. I use the commercials as a audio cue to get, to go do something, run and do something, or answer an email, or to look up at the screen again. I want the commercials. I want the full production. So I'm on the minority on this side. ESPN, according to Awful Announcing, Matt, claims that they produce it this way and deliver it this way because it's to give the viewer a more natural experience as if they're in the stadium themselves. And I give it the biggest of wanker, dismissive, yeah, right. That's why you do it. You probably don't have permission from the advertisers to put it over on a separate channel. Or you want to charge them more later. Or I don't know what game you're playing. Don't give me this. We're doing it for the fans. It's also not as good because early in the game last night, there was a lot of, during commercial break, back channel audio coming through. And there was a quick snippet where Holly Rowe starts feeding info up to the booth about the Mendoza hit to his lip. And she's like, all right, guys, Cignetti is really, really unhappy with the Mendoza hit. And he just said, and I'm leaning in, listening, going, oh boy, Holly, don't end your career here. You're working without a net right now. This is going out over 4K. And then they cut the audio right there as some engineer realized, oh, shit, we can't have that. So for the rest of the game, Miller, all the commercial spots, not only was it just the stadium wide shot, but they cut the audio. So your TV went dead. So if I got up to my desk here to go do something and I'm waiting for the game to start, it went dead to the point where I'm like, I had to turn my head going, okay, it's still there because I wanted to hear something. They weren't feeding any audio.
There wasn't even atmosphere sound or anything?
No, because I guess the channels, they needed the channels to be able to have all the sideline people, producers, and the talent talk during the break. They didn't want to risk. Because like I said, that Holly Rowe thing got out there in the wild, half of it. And so, yeah. So I don't like that. And then a couple fans realized they were in the wide shot of the stadium on the 4K feed, and they started acting the fool every commercial break. Like waving to the camera and eating hot dogs and shit like that. All right.
I mean, that sounds like a pretty good experience, though. I mean, I will say, I watched the whole game last night. I was amazed by the lack of quality of the commercials. Like, there was some real Romco, like, this should be on during Price is Right level ads. Like, there were like two, like, furniture company like ads during the big game, and I was like, you're telling me you couldn't like get like bigger name companies to fill these spots?
Wow.
I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Wrapping up, and I appreciate your time. Holy shit, 51 minutes and your dog is going crazy right now.
No, she's fine now. She just needs to hear our takes on 4K.
Right. I'll give you a couple of quarters for a couple quick songs here. Future of college football. In a sane world, they would not expand beyond 12. They don't really need more than 8, if you ask me, but they wouldn't expand beyond 12, and they would move the schedule up to occupy December. And the whole thing would end gloriously on New Year's Day at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, championship game. That's the perfect schedule. There's more money to be made, though, in January, and the television networks call the shots, so they're going to go the exact wrong way. They're going to expand. And they're going to push deeper into January, and that sucks.
Yeah, they're going to learn a lot of the wrong lessons from this year's national championship, because I'm sure the numbers are going to be great. And they're going to be great because there was great narratives going into the game. You have an iconic Florida team. You have this incredible modern Cinderella in Indiana. And it was a Monday night in January. What else were you going to do?
Sure.
like that is the reason why the ratings for this game are going to be great, but they're going to take from that, oh, we can push this back as far as we want. We can play this in February if we want to at this point. And that's going to suck. Because I do think New Year's Day feels like the perfect place to end a college football season. It is a logical endpoint. It is where spiritually, if you are a college football fan, you feel like the season ends there. And it felt weird that, you know, we had all this portal talk and we've had all this, you know, oh, where's this guy going talk. And it's like, oh, by the way, they still have to figure out who the champion is. Like, yeah. we still have the whole thing this leads to.
The process of the sport should never overtake the games when the games are at their most important.
It's a very sweet 2005 opinion to have. Like, that's just not modern times now. Every process is overtaking the enjoyment of everything.
I know. The other thing is there was 10, count them, 10 NFL games played between the semis in college and the championship game. You can't have that.
It's bug nuts.
It is. All right.
Some year there's going to be a playoff between, you know, I don't know, two boring teams that no one really wants to watch. And I'm sure the ratings will be fine enough because, again, Monday night in February or January, what else are you going to do? But, like, you can't survive this long of a delay. You just can't. People, I mean, this is my Oscars issue, you know? Why did the Oscars, a thing celebrating a movie, the movies from the prior year, happen 3 months, a quarter of the year into a new year? Way to make yourself irrelevant. Like, it is just, it's dumb management on all these places' parts.
Yeah. Okay, your music is playing, as you can hear, George Michael's Careless Whisper. This was
the dulcet sounds.
This was Matt's walk-up music with me every week on the game. And I regret approving it when I first said, let's do this thing once a week. But you chose it, and it's yours. On the way out to the great George Michael and Careless Whisper, give me your quick thought on the NFL playoffs.
This AFC championship is stupid. I'm so mad at the Bills for, frankly, fucking up so hard. This was their year. I wanted to root for Josh Allen. I wanted to root for Buffalo and their insane fans. I didn't want to root for Sean Payton and this, you know, frankly, pretty okay Broncos team at best.
Mm-hmm.
And now I gotta watch a stupid Broncos team with an even worse quarterback than usual that's gonna get smacked by the Patriots.
What so if they I don't get smacked and you gotta watch Stiddy a second time in 2 weeks in San Francisco.
Roger Goodell won't let it happen. Roger Goodell will literally hire snipers to take Stidham out on the field.
You know, that's interesting. I've often said the NFL likes to put their thumb on the scale like a crooked butcher in a Brooklyn deli. But we'll see if the finger on the scale gets really, really bad. If it looks like Stiddy is slinging it and the Broncos have a chance to beat the Patriots. Patriots did not do much to win that game against the Texans. They just let C.J. Stroud vomit all over himself and called it a day.
Yeah, it'll be very – I'm also – thank God the Bears are gone too. Like, that's wonderful. Caleb Williams play overrated. I'll say it. It's going to be a weird Super Bowl. It is the Super Bowl this season deserves. No one was really that good this year. We're getting a bunch of teams in the Super Bowl that were all kind of like this. This is the best. Okay.
Well, you're still going to watch, and we'll still talk about it and the commercials after it's all said and done.
I'm already seated.
Okay, Mr. Miller, you're the best. Matt's Substack is outstanding. It's called A Man About Film, and there's a lot of good movie industry stuff there. It's not necessarily encouraging about the state of Hollywood. But
the state of Hollywood isn't exactly encouraging.
Exactly.
About the state of Hollywood.
You gotta play the cards you're dealt. You know, the weatherman can't change the weather. He's just got to report on it. So,
hey, there's good stuff out there. There's good movies. There's still good work being made. And Oscar nominations Thursday. Let's see how they
okay.
come up this time.
We'll revisit next week during the dead week between the Super Bowl week starting and the AFC NFC title games.
Don't know what you're talking about. We'll be on hour 7,500 of Stidham talk, baby.
All right, Mr. Miller, you're the best, buddy. Thanks.
Thank you.
We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh, no. With MyBookie and its cash-out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag. Let me finish with some emails. You can always hit me up at zabe@yahoo.com. I do read them all. They come right to me. I respond to 90% of them. If you don't get a response, do not be daunted. I have read your email. And it's important that you know that. This one from Greg Rupert. Indiana timeout with 51 seconds left, he writes. Zabe, I appreciate all your work, especially the analysis of clock management and timeouts. In the game last night, there was a timeout which may have seemed unusual, and I was curious as to your take on it. It was on Miami's final drive as Indiana called timeout on defense with 51 seconds left, which stopped the clock for the Hurricanes. At first, I thought it was unusual, but with Miami gaining momentum and Indiana seeming to get tired, it seemed like a basketball timeout where a team gets on a roll and the coach takes a timeout to try to settle things down. Indiana only had to hang on for 50 more seconds, so I thought that taking the timeout to regroup seemed like a good idea. I know that it stopped the clock and also gave time for Miami to regroup, but Indiana needed it more. Anyway, I was curious as to what your thought was on it. I definitely get not stopping the clock for Miami, but maybe Indiana just needed a break and needed to stop the momentum, like in basketball. Thanks, Greg in Virginia. Greg, you are not wrong, sir. I believe, and I think most people agree, 'twas a brilliant timeout by Cignetti at just the right moment. See, in college football, the golden 40-second time coupons that exist in the NFL are watered down by the fact that they stop the clock in college to reset the chains on every first down. And that serves like a soft, free halftime out of sorts because it allows teams to get up to the line of scrimmage and waste no more than a few seconds once the referee puts the ball down and in play to either get another playoff or spike the ball. So the value of college football second half timeouts is definitely a lot less. And when you're leading like Indiana was, having timeouts is not nearly as important because you're not trying to save time to score to either tie the game or take the lead. You're already in the lead. And obviously, Cignetti could sense his team was both out of gas and a little bit out of sorts. Now, speaking of that, in overtime between the Rams and Bears, Ben Johnson, smart as he is, and by the way, he's one of the coaches in the NFL that uses timeouts the most properly in the second half. Somebody created a chart of what coaches spend what timeouts on what things in the second half only, whether it's on offense or defense, whether it's to avoid a penalty or to challenge, and on and on. And Ben Johnson rated the best at basically understanding these are time coupons. That's all they are. And he's even said before, I don't want to use a timeout just to save a five-yard penalty. Okay, good. So Ben Johnson gets it in that regard. What he didn't understand, and this stunned me, was the Rams go tempo in overtime once they got the ball, and they start moving it. And it was pretty clear that the Bears' defense was tired. They couldn't sub personnel out. And Ben Johnson sat there with three timeouts in overtime. Not just a ton of timeouts, but timeouts that are essentially worthless. In fact, overtime timeouts in the NFL are almost only good for stopping you from getting a penalty. Because think about it, the game will not end ever in a tie. So you don't need time coupons although I believe they would reset the quarter. Let me think about that. I guess you would need the timeouts to keep the first 15 minutes or the first 10 minutes from expiring because then they start a new game. Okay, let me amend that. Timeouts in overtime are not nearly as important as they are in the regular season. But using just one timeout there would have been very worth it, in my opinion, for the Bears, but Ben Johnson decided not to. And I don't get it. And I don't get why there's nobody on his staff going, call a timeout. Look, we got three of these. We're going to go home to the offseason with three of these in our back pocket. We might as well call one. He didn't call one. And the Rams made play after play, whether they were aided. I mean, in theory, you could say, well, maybe Ben Johnson's like, I want them rushing. I want them to make a mistake. I'm confident with our guys out there to be able to play at a quick tempo. Maybe. I just don't believe it, though. This email from Jim Lipsky. Zabe, I'm celebrating my 12th consecutive year as one of your one percenters. Thank you very much. I'm enjoying the commercial-free podcast that I pay for at a very reasonable rate for your level of entertainment. Thank you, thank you. I started listening to your show on Laser, or starting listening to you on Laser 103 many years ago. Yes, before it became The Hog. And I would tune in just to hear your segment. In 2014, I took a role on the west side of Madison and had a three-hour commute trip daily. You, Solly, Scott, and Timmy Murray made those drives most enjoyable. Well, fast forward to today, and I'm now living and working in the greater Tampa area, and I continue to listen via podcast on my commute or in the gym. As a 6785er, not quite a 6886er, but close, I enjoy the historical frame you bring to current events, be it sports, culture, or whatever else comes up. As someone that also works in a fickle industry, I understand your current situation. My recent home purchase, though, was from a Samsung employee that needed to relocate away from Florida. So when we go to take a look at the house, what do? But I walk into a three-screen TV setup, just like the five-hour Energy Dome. 82 flanked by 55, 55. When my wife and I walked into that room and I saw it, I said, man, Zabe would love this setup. She then replied sarcastically, well then, we gotta have it. Now, you got a good one there, Jimmy boy. I've already accommodated it to my music, sports, and bourbon hobbies to make it my own, and added the soundbar per your recommendation. Appreciate all you do for us out here on the other end of the speakers. Thank you. If you're ever down this way, let me know. My son works at a private club here, and we just moved down near Stream Song. Ooh. Lastly, on a future Friday cast, can you please ask Solly, what are you doing for the weekend? I miss the tone of his none of your business response. Sincerely, Tampa Jim. Thank you, Tampa Jim. I appreciate that. This email from John Zierke. Butchie, he writes, Xavi, it was great to hear you and Butchie back together. I hope he gets added to the rotation, especially in the summer, because I love hearing about his cabin. It was also enlightening to hear more about what happened at 97.3 The Game and the contractual side of things. I've been handcuffed myself with a 12-month non-compete for leaving an engineering consulting company to go out on my own. Oh, by the way, March 1st is Liberation Day. I had so many people suggest I just blow it off because it was, quote, unenforceable. Well, I spoke with an attorney here in Minnesota who said that if they decided to come after me, the venue would be Texas, where the company is headquartered. And apparently the freedom-loving capitalists in Texas are hard asses about all this stuff. Who knew? Anyway, carry on. Sincerely, John. P.S. Wishing all the best for Butchie's. Boy, I can't imagine how stressful that is. Then there's this. Larry Large. Hello, Zabe. I really thought your tease about Reunited was going to be about Jayco. Have you guys really fallen out so badly that reconciliation is impossible? Having listened to all your various shows and formats over a very long time, I've been curious about the falling out that you had. And I remember that the show seemed to be this, and I remember the show that seemed to be the straw that broke the back. It's sad to lose friends over petty disputes. I've experienced that myself. So unless Jay has drawn a hard line in the sand, I wish you guys could reconcile. And regarding Butchie and his son Blake, I've been through the exact same thing. Oh my. My son was older at the time, but he still went through two brain surgeries just a couple years apart. If he's interested in some insight as to someone who's been through what he's facing, please feel free to give him my info. I'd be glad to speak to him and provide any insight on what he's going through. Take care, and as always, keep up the good work. Larry in Lancaster, PA. Regarding Jay, I too miss Jay, the fun, irreverent brother from another mother. But the way we left it was I said, look, I never have paid you to come on this podcast, and you don't have to, but I will have you anytime if you would like to. And he said, last thing he said was, I'll let you know. And I said, cool. And that was that. There is no big falling out other than just we got sideways. And like I said, since I'm not paying anybody to be on this podcast, I can't twist anyone's arm or say, like, come on, man, come on. And I would only want Jay on if he's cool with everything. And if we need to hash it out further, I'll be fine to hash it out further. But I'm just taking his cue as to he would like to gently sail off into the wide ocean, which happens in life. I'm just now at this age, 57, I am dealing with the feelings and the confusion at times of people that you felt were close in your life and would always be friends sailing off into the ocean, either in for no reason at all, or maybe sometimes for a little tiff that you would never think would be a, that's it, we're not friends anymore. And I'm not saying it's been a bunch of people, but I'd say like three or four people. And I don't like it. I don't like, life is too short. These people were my friends for a reason, because they were funny and I enjoyed spending time with them. So it sucks, but everyone is different. Everyone has their reasons, their emotions, their feelings, and their concepts of what is acceptable or not acceptable. Sometimes people step on other people's toes and don't even realize it. This email from Eric Dreyer. Hello, Zabe. I'm currently listening to the MLK show with you and Nick Ashew on 106.7 The Fan. That's right. I'm a Milwaukeean, and I'm listening to your DC show. It's fantastic, by the way. Yes, Nick is really good because he's young, he's energetic, he watches everything, he knows just about everything, he's a good broadcaster. Anyway, I live in the Milwaukee area, and I've listened to you for years on the radio, and I'm also a podcast subscriber. The very second your show and station got shut down in Milwaukee, sports radio in this town went straight to shit. I'm convinced nobody in these parts watch any other games than Wisconsin teams. It's mind-numbing listening to the same Packers BS all day long, especially when they're not even playing games anymore. It's so refreshing listening to guys like you and Nick, who actually watch the playoff games, not being played by your hometown teams, and talk about the craziness of them and all the details. Josh and Trevor in the morning around here are terrible, and it's not, and it ain't Josh's fault. Boy, sorry, Trevor, you're catching a stray here. Again, I've never heard you two guys together before, but it seems like you feed off each other really well. It's a bummer there's not more of you guys on the radio, but I'm here for at least the three segments. Hashtag more Zabe and Ashush, Eric and Muskego. Thank you very much for that, Eric. I can't speak to what Josh and Trevor are doing and the style of their show and the content mix of their show or anything else. I will say that the one thing that I struggle with a lot doing a regular radio show in Milwaukee was I keep hearing from some people like, nobody cares about that. They just care about the Packers and the Bucks and the Brewers and Milwaukee things. And I was always like, but they're not also NFL fans? Like, they didn't watch those four playoff games and have definite opinions and thoughts and excitement about this, that, and there. I've had people tell me, nah, the average blue-collar, hoodie-wearing, Leinenkugel-drinking Wisconsinite, they love their teams, and that's that. So I don't know what to say. Is it true? Is it not true? Is it sort of true? We'll see. This one from Patrick Schomer. Hey, Zabe, I'm in Madison, so I knew about Brian Butch long ago when he played hoops for the UW. I knew you and him did a show on 97.3 The Game in Milwaukee because you frequently mention it, but I don't listen to the radio. I work from home, so there's no commute. I do listen to podcasts, though, a lot of podcasts. And you have two great ones that are must listen. Well, thank you. That said, I really enjoyed your Tuesday podcast with Brian. His stories of his playing days sound extraordinary and would be interested. I would be interested in an endeavor, aka new podcast, that brings you two together again, or reunited, as your blog post is titled. By the way, how do you not bump out with the great Peaches and Herb classic from our youth of Reunited? I forgot to do it, and by the time I was done, the episode was edited, posted, and I'm done for the night. And I was like, oh, that's right. I could have played the song. Kind regards, Patrick Schomer from Madison, Wisconsin. Scott Cluthier, Wilmington, Delaware. Steez, I must say I thoroughly enjoyed the segment with your mother that you had on Monday. It warmed my heart in a very special way, and I love that you shared that exchange with us. Like you, I'm a fortunate man in that at 57 years old, I have my mother, actually have both my mother and my father still with me. The conversation was very much like the ones I have with my mother still today. Thank you again for sharing. Also, since the unfortunate end of the show in Milwaukee, I've enjoyed the minor change-up in guest content and slightly, dare I say, edgier take on some of your points. Keep up the great work and great content, respectfully, Scott. I don't know if I've been edgier or not, but okay. This one from Calvin. He writes, Calvin McKee. Zabe, I pulled over, got out of my truck, and literally applauded on I-43 when I heard who your guest was. Butchie. Miss you guys and miss the morning show badly. Thanks for your time. Well, if you really did that, I'm assuming that's a bit of an exaggeration right there, but okay. Thank you. Mike Roche, also in Madison, says, Steve. Couple things for you this morning. I wasn't sure what to expect when you said yesterday there'd be a big reunion today. When I heard Basketball Gronk was going to be on, my day was made. I missed the entire station here in Wisconsin, but especially you and Butchie. It was always a three-hour chuckle fest when you guys were on. Well, that was the goal. Secondly, I'm going to Ireland this summer and going to play a course called Old Head. If you're looking for one more, if you've played any of the southern half of the fine country of Ireland that you could suggest, that would be great. I've played Doonbeg, which is down there, and I've played Royal Portmarnock up outside of Dublin. That's not on the southern coast. And that's it. But Old Head, I saw it. I was going to try to play it. Didn't get a chance. It's a newer course. Spectacular right on the cliffs. People have had rave reviews about it. Boyle 1%, Roche in Madison. What's Boyle? Don't know. Oh, he said, lastly, I want to echo the sentiments of an email you read this morning about, hey, if you know when you're going to be on somewhere else, let us know. I, too, would adjust my daily listening. Not that I would be tough anymore because there's no good sports radio left in the entire state. At least none to listen to for 3 hours. 1%er, Roche in Madison. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Betsy Husek. Hello, Betsy. Loved hearing you and Butchie again. Loving your podcast after years of listening to you on the radio. Going back to your obsession of the Brass Bonanza song for a hockey team. I don't remember that. I don't remember a lot of things I did on the radio, but you people do, and I appreciate that. I can feel the friendship between you and your guests, which makes all the difference in the world. And listening to your mother again, oh my, she's a hoot. Life has thrown me some curveballs, as it does for so many, and listening to your show is my daily break from reality. Well, that's wonderful to hear. I had emailed a few weeks ago after you had Dolph on the show, and you replied, which was totally unexpected. You're a good egg, Steve Zabin. Keep up the great work, Betsy, a subscriber. You're a good man. You're a good egg, Charlie Brown. What was that? You're a good man, Charlie Brown? I think that's what it was. Then one more. Kenneth Hesser writes from Hesser and Kipke, attorneys at law, Florida. Zabe, Florida employment lawyer here. Heard the basketball Gronk show and compelled to offer some brief, unsolicited, but non-billable legal advice. You made some excellent points this morning about non-competes. You know, I get calls on them frequently. Here's my only two things to say. One, first question I always ask when somebody inevitably says, well, you know, I heard that these things are unenforceable. I reply with, well, did you realize that the time that you were signing it? Most answer, yes. I reply, okay, well then, it's enforceable. Just like any other contract, unless the terms are, quote, unconscionable. Unconscionable! Which is rare. Most any larger company worth its salt had their 10 high-priced lawyers gaming the whole thing out. True, true, true. Number two. That said, as you noted, enforcement is ultimately up to the company, and it comes down to a cost-benefit decision. The risk is, at least in my experience, if an aggrieved employee wants to test the waters, then once a former employer goes in on enforcing a non-compete, almost always said company is all in. I mean, all in like 2003 Phil Hellmuth at 3 a.m. on ESPN2. In. Yes, pot committed. Money becomes no object, and like Trump meeting with Zelensky, guess who has all the cards in that showdown? Exactly. If you're going to take on a non-compete and spend a lot of money on lawyers and you win somehow, think of the game show announcer voice in your head. Tell him, Bob, what has he won? The right to go find another job a few months early. For all that money and all that drama. P.S. Your mom was awesome. Ale forever. Kenny in Florida. Thank you, Kenny, for the non-billable, unsolicited, but solid legal advice. In case you did not hear, Zabe Vegas 2026 is on, baby! We are bringing it back. Zabe Nation will gather at the MGM Grand in their Level Up Arcade right next to the sports book where they've got the most awesome Papa Shot machine. It is not like your Dave & Buster's Papa Shot. This is a 10-foot, full-sized, really test-your-shooting-skills Papa Shot. And we are going to have a 64-man and woman tournament to see who is the king of Papa Shot. Entry fee is $64 to match the field of 64, and only 64 bids will go out. I'm not going to have more than 64 people. So claim your bid now. It'll be myself and some friends to be determined later. Hopefully Butchie can make it out for that. Vegas, basketball, t-shirts, hats, prizes, and a trip to the Vegas sign for all of us for a group photo that will surely be your next year's Christmas card. Jack Briggs down in Phoenix says, I'm in if you'll have me. Thanks for bringing this back. It's been missed. Boom, there's one bid to the WAC conference that has been claimed. Then there's this. Pete Salkowski. I want to go. I could never do Sunburn Bowl because it was during our important February ratings month, but this will be great. Please send any details, recommended days to fly in and out, and recommend hotels. I will do that indeed. If you want to be part of Zabe Vegas 2026, email me, zabe@yahoo.com. I'll put you on my list. I'll correspond with you. I'll tell you exactly what we're doing, and we'll get this thing stood up some 7 years later. What a damn shame. 7 years down, thanks to COVID. 2019 was the last one. So much has changed. Vegas has changed. But you know what? Come on and watch some basket. That hasn't changed. That's going to be fun. All right, we're done today. Thank you for listening. Rate and review. Tickle the algorithmic overlords. Tickle them right in the feels. Spread the word, and I appreciate it very much. Just remember, winning is nice, but getting paid, as Mr. X would say, is even nicer. We will see you next time.
Just think, while you've been getting down and out about the liars and the dirty, dirty cheats of the world, you could have been getting down to this sick beat.
We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh, no. With MyBookie and its cash-out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag.